gentlemen, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea. Welcome to Travel Talk Radio with your hosts, Sandy and Bob Nesoff. Tonight, we have a special interview for you. It's not the Red Baron, but a beautiful vintage aircraft. It ain't Snoopy, but at Old Rhinebeck Aerodrome, you can take flight an aircraft nearly a century old, fly in an open cockpit plane the way barnstormers did in the days just after World War I. You can browse a museum there with its ancient aircraft and military artifacts, and it's only about an hour or so out of New York. And our guest this evening is Michael Fisher, who is on the Board of Trustees and also has a title there as Air Boss. Good evening, Mike. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good to be with you tonight.
Mike, let's start off. Why don't you give us a little bit of the history about Rhinebeck Aerodrome?
We are in our jubilee year. We are 60 years. Back in 1958, a gentleman by the name of Cole Palin, who was our founder, carved a runway out of an abandoned farm in northern Dutchess County, New York, in the heart of the Hudson Valley. He had been collecting some ramshackle aircraft, and I guess the genesis of the whole thing was when he was 3 years old, he moved under the traffic pattern of a mid-Hudson Valley airport called Red Oaks Mill, and he grew up watching those airplanes fly. It was his intention as a young lad to learn to fly and to somehow have those airplanes. You would have thought that at his age, World War II would have provided that opportunity to fly. It did not. He was a foot soldier, an infantryman in the Battle of the Bulge. But when he returned, he used the GI Bill to learn to fly and to get his aircraft pilot's license and mechanic's license at a place called Roosevelt Field on Long Island. Those familiar with Roosevelt Field will know that's where Charles Lindbergh took off from on his way to Paris. It was a historic airport. But it was about to become a Macy's. They were building a shopping center. And the mechanics school had a collection of old airplanes, including a number of World War I machines. And Cole bid on them, and he actually won six of them, which was a very big surprise to him. Because the other bidder was the Smithsonian. Yeah, the other bidder was the Smithsonian. And he was very surprised to find that he got those airplanes. He still had the farm up next to the airport, and he towed those airplanes behind a 51 Chevy back to a Red Oaks Mill and began to rebuild them in his mother's chicken coop. And he flew the airplanes there for a bit. He began to pick up some movie work, some advertising work, eventually accumulating enough money to abandon his job and to move up to Rhinebeck, purchase this farm, build the airport, and he wasn't quite sure what he was going to do, but he began to attract interest. People began to come out to see this guy who was flying these old airplanes, and so he put out a top hat, and people could do donations. That seemed to work pretty well, and he had this idea that there was more to it than just taking the airplanes up and around the airport, and that he should build some sort of program that would attract people to come. And over the years, that did indeed happen. He began to charge admission. It made enough money that he was able to run it as a business. And it grew and grew and grew until about 1993, he passed away. And when he did, he left the aerodrome and the aircraft to the Rhinebeck Aerodrome Museum, an entity that was set up as a nonprofit foundation that became chartered as a museum by the New York State Board of Regents. And today we continue his work, but not as a business. It's a 501c3 nonprofit. And we support ourselves on the admissions for the air shows, the biplane rides, gift shop sales, and donations.
That's very interesting. How many planes are there now? More than the six?
Oh, yeah. Depending on what you consider an airplane, because we do have bits and pieces of some historic machines that are not complete, there are about 65 airplanes. So the collection grew from the original six to 65. We have, interestingly, just reacquired in the last year the first airplane that landed at the aerodrome. And that is a 1941 Fleet Finch, which was a Canadian trainer built during World War II. That is now flying in our air shows every Saturday and Sunday. We were able to trace where it went. It turned out the gentleman who owned it was willing to have it come back to Rhinebeck and was very reasonable in terms of what he wanted for it. So this year is a big year for us. We're doing our Diamond Jubilee. We have our first airplane back, and we're looking forward to it.
Well, what new attractions or activities have you got lined up for the this anniversary?
We started the Diamond Jubilee year with a gala, which came off very successfully, and that is an annual fundraiser for us. It's a way for us to get a little bit more in the coffers so that we're able to maintain the operations. This year, we're doing a number of special events, and they have already started. We started our first air shows. We're on June 9 and 10, and some things that are coming up in the course of the season. We'll be doing a First Responders Day. That is coming up, I believe, and I'm not quite sure when this is going to air, but that will be on the weekend of the 16th of June, and first responders get in free. We will be doing an Army event, which will be coming up also in late June, and that will be, we have a contact at West Point. It looks very much like we will have the West Point parachute instructors jumping for us at the air show on Sunday. And so that is a big deal for us. Something that we hope to have happen a little bit later on in the season is the return of our SPAD 7 to the airshow lineup. That was a machine that we had been flying for a number of years. It went to the biggest airshow in the country out at Air Venture in Oshkosh. And coming back, it ran into bad weather, had to land on a golf course. There was damage to the airplane. That has been repaired, and so we're restoring that to the lineup. We have two British aircraft, both of them Sopwith, the Sopwith Pup and the Sopwith Dolphin. The Pup should be back sometime around mid-season, and the Dolphin toward the end of the airshow season, which goes through late October. And that's a big deal for us because we have been heavy on Axis aircraft for the last few years, just out of circumstance. We had more German airplanes than we did Allied airplanes. We now have the possibility of having three of those Allied aircraft back by the end of the season, and we're looking forward to that.
That sounds fabulous. I'm just wondering, with the changes in weather all over the country, have you been affected at all by those changes?
We have been affected by weather since the first air show. And if you're in the air show business, you just learn to roll with the punches. It's really interesting. On our first two shows, we had perfect weather for an air show. It was calm winds. The temperature was reasonable. But we had overcast. That overcast was at 13,000 feet, but people look up and they see gray, and they're not as likely to venture out to an air show. Although we did pretty well. We did better than average for those first two shows. Yes, weather is always a factor, and there are components of that. We can even fly in a light rain. It's more often with these airplanes, it's more often going to be wind conditions that will hold them on the ground. That's really where we're flying the oldest regularly flying airplane in the Western Hemisphere. That's a 1909 Blériot. It flies at about 30 miles an hour, which means that if you get 15 miles an hour anywhere that's not straight down the runway, that airplane becomes difficult to control. So, yes, weather affects it, but people who are thinking about coming should check our website. Check our website and check our Facebook posts, and I'll give you the website right now. I'll try and repeat it a couple of times for your listeners. It's Old Rhinebeck, RHINEBECK.org. And if we're going to cancel, we post on the website immediately. So, folks, you have the opportunity to get waved off. We also have two Facebook presences, and that's just, you know, go into the line at the top and put in Old Rhinebeck Aerodrome, and it'll get you there. But that's the first thing we do when we have a problem with the weather is we get that notice out because we don't want people to come and be disappointed.
Well, let me ask you, Mike. I assume you draw a lot of people from the New York metropolitan area, New York, New Jersey, what have you. How far is it from New Jersey, from New York City, and can it be easily reached if the cliff dwellers in Manhattan don't have a car?
We have such a deal for the cliff dwellers from Manhattan. We have partnered with Metro North Railroad. And Metro North Railroad will take you from Penn Station to Poughkeepsie, New York, which is about a 15 or 20-minute drive from the aerodrome. There is an arrangement with Zipcar that you pick up a Zipcar at Poughkeepsie, and then you drive to the aerodrome. So that's one way to do that, and you do all that through Metro North. They take care of our ticketing. They take care of their ticketing. It's a one-stop for that. And by the way, that is one of the top 10 train rides in the world is coming up the Hudson Valley. So you get that extra bonus. For folks who don't want to drive at all, you can take Amtrak, and you can also take Amtrak. And interestingly, they're going to be leaving from Grand Central this summer because of track work in Penn Station. So people should check which station they have to leave from. That will take you to Rhine Cliff, New York, which is a 10-minute cab ride from us. And the cabs meet the trains. So there are actually two ways to take the train to the plains, coming right on up, and there are convenient schedules that work with the air show.
Okay. That sounds fabulous.
That website once again, Mike?
The website is Old Rhinebeck, RHINEBECK.org. And the best thing to do is to go to the Plan Your Visit section. And everything is there. You got links to accommodations, links to restaurants by type. It tells you how to get to us by every possible way, including air. People can fly in, but we do have a prohibition that they have to talk to us about it first because the field is very challenging. But we have folks who fly in. We have people come by train. We have people who come by car. We have people who come by motor coach. And we welcome them all. We're happy to see them.
That's wonderful. Let me ask this, if I may. How many of the planes, of the 65 that you have, are airworthy? Can they be flown, or how many fly,
mm-hmm.
or how many on any given day when you have visitors would be able to be airborne?
Very good question. We fly between 15 and 20 at any given time, and that depends largely on the rotation of the restorations. An airplane has to be refurbished, rebuilt every so many hours. Any airplane needs work. And so we will fly an airplane up to the point where we feel that it needs that service. We take it out of rotation and bring another airplane that we've been working on into rotation. So at any given point on the flight line, you're going to see 15 to 20, and those airplanes will fly in the show. The remainder of the airplanes are in our museum, and that is four large buildings that you can spend, depending on your interest, a half an hour or all day browsing.
Well, 15 to 20 is sizable considering you have 65 altogether. I think that's pretty remarkable, actually. And how high can they fly?
Our air show work is from 3,500 feet down to 500 feet. Most of the activity takes place about 800 feet in the air. There are a couple of times where we need that higher altitude, and I don't want to give away the surprises in our act, but we need that higher altitude in order to get something started so that we can come down and do lower altitude. I think for most people, what they want to do is they want to know, can I see it well, and can I get good pictures? And the answer is yes. The takeoffs and landings are all 200 feet from the audience. So they can get absolutely spectacular pictures of takeoffs and landings. And our show line is 500 feet from the audience. So that really is not all that terribly far. And we have seen some really nice pictures that people took with an iPhone and posted on our Facebook pages.
That's great.
Yeah, I think it was Cole Palin who said that if it doesn't fly, it's not an airplane.
Yes, that was one of Cole Palin's head sayings, and that was one of them.
Yeah.
And he truly believed that there are some machines that we will indeed never fly. Either they are so historic that we don't want to risk them, or they cannot be rebuilt. They have been used to the point, sometimes before we ever got them, they've simply been used to the point where rebuilding them would turn them into a new airplane. And we don't want to do that. Now, then the historic value is gone. So we have, particularly, for example, an airplane that is covered with, where the wings are covered with plywood and you can't get in there and see, that type of airplane probably is not going to fly again. And we have a machine like that from Germany, an Aeromarine Klemm. And that will never fly. It's a very pretty airplane and it will sit in the museum, but it would be a risk to fly it and we don't want to do that.
No.
We're going to have to hold for a moment now so we can pay some bills for the commercial, and we will be back in just a minute.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minutes.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Well, they're a little bit out of season, but as long as they pay their bills, we don't really care. Tell us, Mike, what goes into restoring some of these old aircraft? I'm sure that it's got to be a major, major job.
I can tell you, the example I'll use is our Spirit of St. Louis replica, which we built from scratch. That was a 20-year project. We did not work on it every day, but it took 20 years to get the aircraft completed. It is, we believe, the most authentic Spirit of St. Louis copy flying. There are several, and that took 20 years. So it can be, depending on the condition when we receive it, it depends on many things. What's the condition of the wood? Many of these aircraft were primarily built of wood. They actually seem to sometimes do better than those that were built with steel tubing in them, because the steel tubing can rust. And that sometimes, varnished wood seems to last mostly forever. The steel tubing, that can be a big project. And there were a lot of aircraft coming out of the 1920s into the 30s that began to have steel tubing in them. And we have a project right now where we have to replace all of the parts that are on the bottom of the fuselage, the body of the airplane. They all have to be replaced simply because they rusted.
Let me ask this, who flies these planes? In other words, like you do the air show, and I would assume that everybody has to be certified, certainly, and they have to go through all the state manifestations, whatever they have. But you have two separate parts. One is the air show itself, and the other would be whoever does the flying for local passengers, whoever comes up there and says, I'd like to get on such and such a plane and fly it. So do you have
They're all the same crew,
yeah.
And they are a varied group. one of the things we pride ourselves on is taking young folks and training them and bringing them along. And we've had kids who started in the parking lot who are now flying for us. So it's, let me see, how can I explain this? We have a theater manager, two airline pilots, a Piper demo pilot, a 71-year-old retired mechanic, who may be the best pilot of all of them. And so it is a varied group. We're mainly looking for people who have experience in flying a certain kind of airplane, and that would be an airplane that has a tail wheel, and that's the wheel at the back rather than in the front, because landing an airplane, taking off and landing an airplane in that configuration is somewhat different than the modern airplanes that have what they call tricycle gear. So we're looking for people with that experience, but we have crop duster. So it's a varied group. They all have to have the same license. They have to have a commercial pilot's license.
Okay. Fair enough.
Can visitors go up and ride in any of your planes?
We have a 1929 New Standard D25. We actually have three of them. One is currently flying. One is our standby ship, and that sits in the hangar, and it gets used when the main ship is in for maintenance. And the third airplane is under restoration, and we're hoping to see that in a year or two. The New Standard D25 was actually a fairly local product. It was built in Paterson, New Jersey, and the airplanes were built for the great flying circuses of the late 20s, early 30s. Their job was to carry passengers. And there is a record of some sort that was out in Ohio. They flew 1,000 passengers in one day. That's four passengers per flight. Yeah. And the way they did that was they would start at dawn, passengers would come out, they'd get in the airplane, they'd fly them once around the airport, land, take four passengers out of one side of the airplane, put four passengers in on the other side of the airplane. They would stop to refuel and to change pilots, so the pilots got to eat and have a break. So we're flying a very historic airplane, and with three of them, of the original 50, that's a pretty good bunch to have. The airplane is extremely sturdy. The question we always get is it safe? And the answer is yes, of course. It's maintained to modern aircraft standards. One of our pilots has flown over 10,000 passengers himself. So it's a safe sort of a thing to do. It's something that everyone should do. There's nothing like it in the world. We provide the helmet and goggles. And you've got the wind and the wires out there. You're smelling the engine oil. You're going 70 miles an hour with the wind rushing over the windshield and around the side of the airplane. And your head sticking up out of the top of the airplane. It's a remarkable experience. And it's amazing, particularly the number of children who come out of that airplane laughing and clapping and just all sorts of excited, because it's not an airliner. You know, an airliner, you don't even see it. You walk down a jetway, get into what could be a bus, you go wherever, you get out of the airplane, and you walk back up a jetway, and that's not flying. 1929 New Standard D25,
and these days,
that's flying.
Yeah, these days you can't even go into the, where the pilot, into the cabin where the pilot flies from. When we were little, you could do that, and it was a big thrill. And you could see all the instruments and look out the windows. Now you don't have any of that exposed to you because of, I guess, whatever they have to do for security purposes. It's a lot different.
But as I say, I think it's something that everyone should experience once in a lifetime. We made there's an outfit called Flip Key, which is a TripAdvisor subsidiary that rents homes to people when they go on vacation. And they voted us last year one of their top nine bucket list in North America for the biplane ride. And
fabulous.
we were very proud of that.
Oh, sure. I don't blame you.
Hey, Mike, any complaints from the neighbors about low-flying airplanes buzzing the area, scaring cows, sour milk, anything like that?
Actually, very few. We try to be a good neighbor. And so we have four flight patterns. Typically, one of those biplane flights, you take off, you go out over the Hudson River. On a good day, you can see as far north as Albany and as far south as West Point, into the Catskills on the west, into the Taconics and Berkshires on the east. You fly down the river over the Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge and back. But we do that in four different patterns so that we minimize the impact. And that means the airplane is over a person's house once per hour. So every once in a while, there's a curmudgeon who shows up. We usually take him for a biplane ride and make him a convert, but it's very rare. Most people understand that they are living fairly close to something that exists only a couple of places in the world.
All right, that's great. Your operating hours, for the museum and the airfield, are they different?
Yeah.
Or are they the same?
Weekdays, we are open. The museum is open from 10 until 5, and there is no flying scheduled during the weekdays. We may be doing test flying, but there's no air show activity. The museum is open. We may do biplane rides, and if you happen to catch us doing biplane rides, that's fine. If someone wants to do a biplane ride on a weekday, we will do that, but we need a minimum of 2 passengers. So if somebody wants to give us a call or email us through the website, that's great. We even fly one passenger if they'll come up with $200. But if you want to fly weekday, we need you. We need to let be known ahead of time. On weekends, we open at 10. We close when the last person goes home, basically. We're flying biplane rides until dusk. People love those sunset flights. If it's nice weather, you can't beat it. The air show is actually from roughly 2 o'clock in the afternoon until roughly 4 o'clock. The show starts at 2:30, but we have some fairly significant pre-show activity. So that's the schedule. The weekdays 10 to 5 and weekends 10 until folks go home, but you do get an air show in the afternoon.
Mike, you have a whole slew of old artifacts there besides the planes. What have you got?
Well, we got about 30 antique automobiles, which are significant in the air show. They participate in the air show. We have a lot of relics of World War I. We have odds and ends of things that are relevant to the airplanes. We have, for example, a Link trainer, which was an instrument trainer, ground-based instrument trainer from World War II. So there's a lot of, and we have a huge engine collection. We have a huge collection of antique aircraft engines. Engines tend to last longer than airplanes, so there are more of them around. So for folks who are interested in cars or engines or just memorabilia, one of the things that we do is we all dress in period costumes. So if you come to an air show, you're going to see everybody in costume. We want people to come to our air shows and feel like they wandered into a barnstorming airport in 1930.
Okay, I'm going to have to hold you right now. It's been a great interview, and I thank you for being with us. We're just about closing out our time. This is Travel Talk Radio with your hosts, Sandy and Bob Nesoff. And coming up in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have representatives from Ireland coming in to talk about the Emerald Isle. And back to New York again, we'll be going into Otsego County. Mike, just to close, would you like to just once again give the information to contact Old Rhinebeck Airdrome?
Absolutely. The best way to do it is to go to our website because that has all of the other information on it. And the website is Old Rhinebeck, RHINEBECK.org.
And it's got everything on there.
Absolutely. Plan your visit, air shows, everything.
How long is the trip up from New York City?
Depending if you're driving up an hour and a half to hour and 45.
All right, Mike, only got a couple of seconds. Thank you again for being a guest, and we hope to speak to you again in the very near future. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Bye, guys.